hurts me to hear that they don't think people should get married just because they're the same gender. If two people that are different genders can get married, why can't people who are the same genders get married? Sure, they can't bear a child, but so what? That doesn't mean that they can't live and have a nice life together.
11-year-old Robbie Barnett Kemper sums up his reaction to the Ontario Court of Appeal hearing on the question of whether same-sex couples can marry. Robbie is the son of Allison Kemper and Joyce Barnett, one of eight Ontario couples who are suing the government for the freedom to tie the knot. In July of last year, the Ontario Superior Court ruled that they should have that right, but the federal government appealed, and from April 22nd to 25th, the case was argued once again at the appeal court.
Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married.
The Ontario case is unique because it involves two separate parties arguing two very different points of view. One set of couples is arguing that the marriage law violates the Canadian Constitution because it discriminates based on sexual orientation, and that there is no justification for continuing the discrimination. The other party in the case is the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto, who are advancing an argument based on Section 2A of Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That's the section that deals with freedom of religion. Lawyer Douglas Elliott is representing MCCT in the case and explains the position.
Our marriage law is based on the English marriage law, and the English marriage law is based on the canon law of the Church of England, because England has an established church. So, for example, the rules about incest are the Anglican rules of incest. So the fact that we have a rule that says that only opposite-sex people can get married is because our law still reflects the Church of England's rules. And, in fact, this is well demonstrated in Ontario's marriage law history, because when our first marriage statute was promulgated in 1793, only Church of England marriages were legally recognized. Gradually, the scope was expanded to Catholic marriages in 1847, to Jewish and other non-Christian marriages in 1857, and much, much later in 1950, finally, civil marriages outside of the religious context were finally recognized. So it was my position that this rule started off with a religious purpose, which was to discriminate against other religions and enforce Anglican rules against other people, and it still has a religious purpose and a discriminatory religious effect, even if marriage has been become more secular. As I said, the restriction remains religious in its origins, religious in its purpose, and religious in its discriminatory effect on churches like MCCT and on other religious groups like the liberal rabbis who would like to offer same-sex marriage as part of their religious practice but can't.
The Canadian government is defending itself in court by arguing, for one thing, that the court should leave it up to Parliament to define marriage because Parliament is in the best position to consider the vast array of public opinions on the subject. However, lawyers for the same-sex couples have pointed out that Parliament has only ever acted to give same-sex couples equality after the courts have ordered them to do so. The government is also arguing that although the marriage law does not include same-sex couples, it does not discriminate based on sexual orientation. Cynthia Peterson, a lawyer representing EGAL, Canada's national queer rights lobby group in the case, tried to expand on their position.
One of the things that they allege is that marriage has sort of historically, they say universally, although it was pointed out to them by one of the justices on the bench that it's not universal, but they claim universally across all cultures and times, marriage has always been a heterosexual institution, and there's evidence in the record to the contrary, but they continue to insist that if it's not universal, it's virtually universal, and that marriage just is, in its essence, heterosexual. And so I guess the argument is, I've never fully understood it myself, but I suppose the argument is that lesbians and gays and bisexuals ought not to feel that our dignity is in any way demeaned, or we shouldn't feel offended by being excluded from marriage. It's just not an institution that describes our relationships. It's somehow, its essence is heterosexual. I don't know, Douglas, if you can put it any better than that.
I think the way she put it was that the government is not discriminating. It's the institution that simply, by definition, excludes us.
Right.
And it's not the law. The law did not create this institution. It's an institution that existed before the law came along. And so even the law doesn't discriminate because it merely recognizes an institution that already existed.
Their arguments were based on convenience at times.
Kevin Barassa, along with his partner Joe Varnell, is one of the litigants in the case.
And it was kind of funny to watch. We really, at times, felt sorry. Well, maybe not too sorry for the AGCs, because the lawyers for the Attorney General of Canada were really arguing a losing battle and really struggling to try to come up with some kind of logical argument against us.
According to Kevin, the religious interveners didn't fare much better than the government in trying to present a case against same-sex marriage.
David Brown tried to argue that this was something that Parliament or the courts didn't have a right to, in his words, impose on the rest of Canada, that marriage was constitutionally protected. It was very funny. One of the first laughs that came in court was when one of the justices on the bench named a number of constitutional experts and asked if any of those agreed with Mr. Brown's position, and of course none of them do, which Mr. Brown had to admit. But then, of course, he said, "You've left off my own name from that list of constitutional experts." So he cited himself as the sole expert in Canada that would agree with his own position.
The three-judge panel has reserved judgment in the case, and it's unknown when a decision will be handed down. But according to Kevin Barassa, that's just a technicality because he's already sure of the outcome.
100% certain. That they will find unjustified discrimination as we experienced in the divisional court, and very confident that they are going to address Section 2A in much more detail, if not also find a Section 2A violation.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.